The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show. Now, this is what I'm talking about. Look at this day outside. It's absolutely beautiful. Maybe finally spring has arrived, and I guess the weekend's going to be just as nice. So I hope everyone's enjoying the weather and is outside and not listening to the show on Thursday night, unless you have your headphones on and an old-school Walkman on your side. If you miss any of the show, though, you can always catch it on Saturday mornings at 9 and also on WGCLradio.com, or become a iTunes subscriber or a Google Play Music subscriber. And you can catch the podcast whenever you would like. Have a good one today. Rod Holloway will be on to give us our little market update for the week. We're going to do a little news of the week first, though. Brought to you by Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame. Supported by us at Comprehensive Financial Consultants. To learn more about Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame, go to mcshof.com or just Google their name, Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame. Their big banquet's coming up soon. I'm not sure how ticket sales are going, but I'm sure they're fantastic. They always are. It keeps growing and growing and growing. So you'll hear more about the Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame inductees and the big banquet coming up really soon. You know, I've been talking about the government borrowing and how short-term cost of borrowing will be going up, and therefore it makes sense that they'll start borrowing at 10, 15, 20-year, 30-year increments, or maybe 100-year bonds. Why would you not at 3% or 4? But as of, I guess, a week ago, the $2.4 trillion in bills, notes, and bonds that the U.S. has issued year-to-date through Friday, April 20th, only 7% of the debt is 10- or 30-year bonds. That comes directly from the Treasury Department. Have you noticed your gas prices are going up? Well, the average price of gasoline was $2.75 a gallon as of last Friday, up 26.5 cents year-to-date. The last time the average price of gas nationwide was $3 a gallon, back in October of 2014, well, folks, I hate to say it, but I put $3 a gallon gas in my car just this morning. All right, you better start saving now, especially if you have one going to college. The average cost of tuition, fees, room, and board, now mine will start in 2 years, so I don't have a lot more time to save. But during the 2017-18 school year, at an average four-year public college was $20,770, up 5.5% for the year. Over the last 30 years, that has been the case. If the same rate of return, or I'm sure I say return, inflation continues over the next decade, a one-year cost of college in an average state public college will cost $35,389 during the 2027 and 28 school year. Now, that's 10 years away, folks. So if you have an 8-year-old out there, you better start saving now, because 70% of high school graduates actually enroll in college less than a year after graduation. That comes from the Labor Department. But if you're not looking to go to college, not a popular job, but a good job, the trucking industry has a shortage of jobs, approximately 30,000 drivers short. And a critical factor behind rising costs of moving freights is that they have to pay the truck drivers more as well. But trucks move, believe it or not, 71% of all U.S. freight nationwide. Travel up 65 towards Chicago like I did last Thursday evening, and coming home on Friday, and you will believe that 71% of all U.S. freight travels by truck, because I can tell you it was 7-to-1 trucks to cars. A little bit nerve-wracking when you're between two 18-wheelers trying to maneuver at 80 miles an hour. I'm glad I'm back. Anyway, you know, we talk about owning homes, renting homes. Not everyone's made to own a home. And, you know, back in the heyday when anyone could borrow money based on just, I said I made this kind of money, those days are long gone, but, you know, they are easing those policies a little bit, I think. But as the millennials are moving into the marketplace, they're certainly renting first, and maybe even renting again and renting again before settling in, because they're taught, you know, don't, that first job you take, stay there a couple of years, boom, you're going to be headhunted, move to that second job, then the third job, and by the fourth job, that's probably where you're going to settle in. And each time you move, you're going to get bonuses and stock options and all these crazy things. That's what they're being taught out at the school, business, and other places around the country, and I think it's true. But if you look at the number of renters nationwide versus homeowners, it's a pretty big difference from where it was several years ago. I thought that was an interesting statistic that came from the Census Bureau. Let's see, what else we have? Oh, the 10-year Treasury, U.S. Treasury note hit 3% for the first time since 2014. That obviously is a vote of confidence for the economy, and we expect things to continue and expand. But warnings from large companies that profits were peaking helped send the Dow down to their fifth straight decline just a couple of days ago. So we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to lead on that with Hot Rod Holloway to give us our little economic and market update. We'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes on this beautiful Thursday in April. And Rod Holloway, who has windows all around his office, is joining me on the phone. And Rod, boy, it's about time we have some decent weather to look out to. And it makes it a little hard to sit there and look at that green screen today, when I left the office on Thursday, to not be outside and enjoying the weather a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. We've talked a little bit about on Glass in the Morning Show that as we're starting to get the trend towards spring weather and it's warming up, hopefully we can get that same trend working in the market, and the market will begin to warm up again.
It's about time to pull that hot rod mannequin out that you sit at your desk with your back to me, so I think you're actually in there, but you're really out doing something else. So it's just about time to pull that out. Rod, I'll tell you, this is an interesting market. The treasuries, you know, I love watching the treasury. You know, the treasury curves to me tells me so much, treasury rates. And you see the 10-year hitting 3% this week. It was a little bit under that when I left the office today. And that's for the first time since 2014, and obviously that should be a vote of confidence that our economy is expanding and growing. But then you have these large companies that say, hey, wait a second, you know, this is going to make it more expensive for us to borrow. We think our profits are peaking. And then that sends the Dow down the tubes at least a couple of days ago. But like I said, it was green when I left on Thursday, at least for the meantime. But a long term, we still believe this is a good thing, not a bad thing, right?
Yeah, most certainly. Well, you have the great debate, and I find it interesting. It gets talked about all the time with the major equity indices and crossing big whole numbers. Well, you don't hear about it as much in the bond world, but that becomes a bit of an issue as well psychologically. So that big round number for the 10-year Treasury was 3%. You know, each time we approached it earlier in the year before the sell-off in February, we had a quick run-up. We didn't hit 3, but we came really close. We got into the 290s, maybe even as high as 299 before we pulled back down into the 270s. But the market has been fearful of this 3. Well, what are they afraid of in 3? Well, there's two things that they're afraid of. Number one, we've talked a lot about this. When interest rates are really low, you're typically willing to pay a higher price-to-earnings multiple for stocks because they can better take advantage of growth aspects because of cheap capital. The more expensive capital becomes, the tougher it is to chase that growth, and the more costly it is to chase that growth. Therefore, you're not willing to pay as high of a price-to-earnings multiple on that. So that's one negative that you have or that is being talked about. The second one is, there eventually becomes an actual rate that people no longer are willing to invest in the dividend-paying stocks and will start to take money out of that and start to put it into the safer bond alternative, and especially potentially treasuries, which is considered the risk-free rate because we have confidence that our government is always going to give us our money back and they're not going to default on that. So you collect that interest along the way. Now, most people will say that based on history, based on mathematical formulas that they put together, that 3% really isn't the magic number that is going to draw a lot of dollars away from the stock market, that you're probably looking on the low end 3.5%. But really probably closer to 4% before it gets here. But for whatever reason, there has been a lot of talk and rhetoric around that 3% number that is that it and is that where it begins. So the market got a little wobbly when it crossed above it. But our opinion is not that 3% is a negative thing. And as you alluded to, rates are moving up for the right reason. Rates are moving up because we've got good global economic growth. We've got a good, strong job market, low unemployment. Those are the reasons that you want interest rates moving up in a controlled fashion.
When I was back at IU after playing football at Greenville, transferred back to IU, went to, I think it was a business course. I'm not sure it was the business school yet. But anyway, I'm this young stud professor. I remember he was in his late 20s, early 30s, bragged about all of his accomplishments. It was pretty cool. At least he thought he was. And he asked a question. He said, why does interest rates matter to the stock market? And at that time, I had already been studying interest rate cycles and what I called the interest rate decision line, which is what you referred to. And I raised my hand and said, well, there's a point where a person can earn more in a fixed income or as much in a fixed income that they're comfortable with. They'll shift out of equities at that point. And everyone in the class just turned their head. I was 19. They turned their head and looked at me like, who's this freak in the room? The guy says, you're exactly right. So this has been the case for a long time. But I will say this, Rod. Back then, this was in 89, 90, they believed that the investor decision line was 7.5% before someone would move. Now, what I would say is, what was the dividend rate on the S&P 500 in 1989, 1990? I don't know the answer to that, but I think it was higher than it is today. Let's say it was 4. Well, that means that if 7.5 was that, quote, decision line, then I'm thinking at least a third or maybe a half higher than where it is today. So if it's 3, I would say it has to be at least 5 before you're going to see a shift where people say, oh, I'll take 5 all day long and not take the risk of the market. Because what's the, like on our equity income portfolio, you're pulling a 2-plus dividend on that. So why would I move into a 3 to give up the potential of the growth when I'm also getting, you know, what is it, 2-something?
Yeah, exactly. It's probably around 2.4 dividend income model. The S&P is just a tad under 2. And really, as you talk about the rate and the yield, the market's not overly excited about a 3% 10-year. Really, where you see the money flooding in as far as tracking money flows, it's going into short stuff. It's going into stuff 5 years and under. The 2-year treasury is giving you around 2.5.
Yeah, right.
So do you really want to take another 8 years for an extra 50 basis points? Well, no, people are not doing that. They're funneling heavy dollars in to the short side of the curve right now on that, which also signals kind of what you're saying, which is 3% is probably not what's going to move long-term money out of the fixed income or out of the equity arena and into that 10-year treasury.
I was just with a couple who one had retired, one still works for the federal government. She worked for the federal government as well. And they thought, you know, we might need a couple $1,000 a month of income, but we're not real sure. We want to wait a while. And I was talking about building a laddered bond portfolio as kind of their soon bucket and said, okay, well, we're going to allocate $192,000 to the soon bucket. It's going to be all fixed income. And then they said, well, what if we don't need the income? Is that still a smart move? Well, from an allocation standpoint, yeah, you're still going to need this fixed income. They said, well, would you still buy the short term? We would. I don't care who you are, whether you're going to need the money. Now, we're buying 3 to 12 or 2 to 10 anyway. So it doesn't make any difference because, to your point, we're getting paid just. And I drew the little curve for them. I said, if you can make 3% at 10 or 3.2 on a 30, what are you going to buy? You're going to buy the 10-year all day long. So I think that, you know, when people look at their risk tolerance, they look at how they should be invested. We talked a little bit about this last week on how people should invest based on where their income streams come from. But remember the old rule of 100, Hot Rod, where you take your age minus 100, and that's how much you should have invested into equities. You know, and then it moved in our career. I remember in the 90s, remember when the market was so hot, they said, no, it's not 100, it's 110. And I think, you know, whatever, it doesn't make any difference. But, you know, if you're 50 years old, maybe you should be 50-50. I don't know. But I still don't believe that's how you should invest based on these rules of thumb. But if you're looking at yourself 5 years away from retirement, you certainly shouldn't be 100%. You need to build a portfolio based on what you're going to need, when you're going to need it, and usually you're going to be just fine.
Sure. Well, and we talked about it. We had a client meeting this week with a gentleman whose retirement plans have changed. He's pushing off retirement income a ways because he's having a lot of success in a so-called hobby that he's making money with, you know. But we talked to him, even though you don't need the income, that doesn't mean that we may not start taking gains out of your growth portfolio and funneling it over to fixed income just to protect them, because we've been in a long bull market and we're not predicting the end is near. We're just saying, hey, we're getting closer to the end than we are to the beginning of this thing. Therefore, at some point in the near future, it's going to make sense to start taking dollars off and preserving those profits, even though you may not need the income as soon as what we originally thought, and it's a little ways off. So yeah, there's still reason to own fixed income above and beyond generating income today. Sometimes it's just, hey, look, I've made a lot of money in stocks. Why sit back and wait for the market to eventually turn? Because you know what? We are going to have another recession.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know when, but we are going to have another recession. And when we have another economic recession, the stock market's going to go down. So you don't necessarily want to wait and get conservative or try and protect your gains after we know we're in a recession, because guess what? The stock market has already gone down at that point.
Yeah, Doug Hughes calls those known unknowns. We know it's going to happen. We just don't know when it's going to happen. Rod, I want you to hang on for the next segment. I didn't tee you up for this, but you were in on this meeting with this particular client, and when we suggested that he file a restricted application for Social Security, you remember what I'm talking about, I'm sure now.
Yep, sure do.
And I want to tell kind of the story of us going through that process with him and then what Social Security actually said to him, which will just drive you crazy. So we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back, have Hot Rod still on the phone, going through the Social Security story with a real live client. We'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. If you miss any of the show, Saturday morning at 9 is your next time to listen. Also on WGCLRadio.com or always on iTunes, Google Play Music. Just go in there and search Your Money with David Hayes, and you have to search it, folks, because it isn't one of the featured programs that pop up. I know it may shock you, but it's not. All right, here we go, Rod. You were in this meeting with us. Well, we had a client come in, and they wanted to do some retirement planning. So we were doing some stuff, and the gentleman did not want to retire, wasn't ready to retire, probably at least 3 years away. He was 67. His wife was already on Social Security, and I suggested he file a restricted application for Social Security, which meant that he could file and receive 50% of what his wife is receiving, free money, and then delay his benefit until 70, which he was going to do anyway, and then take his big benefit, which should be around $3,300 a month rather than $2,600 today. Free money on the table. So we had him come back. Angela sat down with him, did the application right online, bam, backdated it 6 months. He gets a big fat check, or he will be getting a big fat check, and then also receive about $850 a month for the next 3 years. Again, Social Security is not going to call you and tell you it's available. And that's a great idea. I mean, it was solid, bam, boom, thank you, ma'am. Rod, guess what? About a week after the application, Social Security calls him and says, yes, Mr. So-and-so, are you sure you want to apply for this $850 benefit? Do you not know that you can get almost $2,600 a month now? Yeah. Why would you do that? Well, you know, clients, they don't know why. They just did it because we told them that this was what you should do. And he's kind of the same way. And he says, well, I don't know. And I was telling Angela, are you kidding me? Did they actually call him? I said, what did he say? He said, well, I'll call you back. And I'm like, are you kidding me? And I've had this happen before where they go in and get some information and they question what it is that they're doing. And I'm like, are you crazy? Here's the facts. At 70, he's going to have this monster benefit, $3,300 a month. It's now the family benefit. If he dies, his wife steps up to it. And by the way, she took her benefit to 62, so she wasn't getting much at all. And it's only 85% of the benefit's taxable. And it's not taxed at the state level. Yes, I want to delay to 70 and take my spousal benefit now. Rod, can you believe that? I'm not trying to bash the Social Security Administration. They're understaffed. They're great people. This was a phone call from probably Baltimore or somewhere. But I couldn't believe it that they called and tried to talk him out of taking the spousal benefit, free money. What would that be? $850 for 36 months. It's a lot. And take his own benefit now? I don't know. I just didn't get it. But I wanted to tell you that you didn't even know this story.
Yeah, no, I knew that we had made the call and had helped set the ball rolling in that direction. I did not hear about that return call. You know, and part of the problem with that is, and more than likely where the people in the Social Security office are coming, nobody gives much thought to future value of dollars versus present value of dollars and comparing those. So just like what you're doing, and that's what you did for the client, is said, okay, yeah, you could take a bigger Social Security benefit today. But the reality is you don't need the Social Security income for your monthly living expenses. So let's take some of it because it's free money, as you said, left on the table. We've given plenty to the government. There's nothing wrong with getting a little bit of our dollars back from the government. But the ability to take a much larger monthly payment in just a few years. So if you go and you do the math, you come out ahead when you do the math. Now, of course, the great unknown in all of that, and that gives you the simplest answer and the right answer if we knew it, which is, when are we going to pass away? If we knew that, then we always know, hey, are we better off taking it at 62? Do we take it at 67? Do we take it at 70? We don't know that, so we always have to make the assumption we're going to live to full mortality age and potentially beyond when we're doing these analysis, which means time is on your side in which you're going to collect those dollars for a much longer period of time, which then puts you that much further ahead if you're able to delay that 70 payment and get the much higher Social Security, even though you're taking a little bit less today, because they weren't understanding. We weren't taking it out of need today.
No.
We were taking it because it's on the table and available for us today.
Over $30,000 over the next 3 years, that can go down to pay down the debt. And when I just did a brief scratch out, I'm like, okay, you know, just based on what your take-home pay is and what you're using it for now, this gets eliminated. Then, boom, this Social Security, bam, that Social Security. You're only going to need a couple thousand dollars from your investments to provide the lifetime income. And Rod, as you know as well as I do, it's much easier for us to manage a cash flow for 3 to 5 to 10 years than it is for 30 years. So if you have less stress on your money from age 70 to age 90, that's great. That's where you need less stress, because the known unknowns, as we just talked about, that's what we're trying to manage for. And you saw and talked to the wife. She exercises like 6 times a day. She's going to live to 150. So someone's going to get that extra.
That's right. She needs some protection for herself because she plans on being around for a while.
Folks, when we talk about this, we laugh and joke about it. But when one spouse dies, you always lose at least one check, maybe two if you have a pension, and your taxes go up. So why not have an age 70 benefit, $3,300 a month, that's only subject to 85% of it subject to federal tax at the most, and not subject to any state income tax. That's a great, and inflation adjusted in most cases. So that's the point of all this. And to Rod's point, even if they needed the money, if we had enough money to kind of bridge that gap for the next, you know, 36 months to give them that much higher, more tax efficient, inflation adjusted income stream, I can tell you, I'll sit down and argue that point all day long, and I have the math to prove it. And to Rod's point, you know, you never know when you're going to die, but I've never heard anybody that at 82 years old, when they knew their break-even point was 82 and a half, say, oh, my God, I wish I would have waited to take Social Security. I wish I wouldn't have waited to take Social Security. It's the last thing on your
exactly.
mind at that point.
Well, so, like I said, and it has to be a mathematical calculation. It's not just a simple, okay, 650 today versus 2600. No, it's more than that. It is that future value and what that future value is worth over the long haul.
Yeah, and we have a Social Security analysis software that we have purchased that's really great. It doesn't take into account everything, so we have to, you know, understand that, and we can kind of manipulate it to fit the situation. But if anyone would like to have a free Social Security maximizer or a free analysis, just email our office at cfci.us, and several of you have, and we're working on getting that information to you. Kevin in our office can plug that information in. He can send it to you, he can explain it to you, and hopefully give you what you need. That's what we're here for. So, Hot Rod, hey, thanks a lot. Enjoy this weather for Thursday night and then on into the week, and I'm sure you have plenty of projects at home to work on.
Yeah, most certainly do. Got a lot of stuff outside that has been waiting for me to get done with my basketball season and the weather to warm up. So both are happening all at the same time. So it looks like I'm going to be busy outdoors.
All right, man. We'll hear you on Friday morning with Glass, and then again on Monday morning. So you got what bookends here on the weekend and a lot of weekend fun. So, hey, we'll see. I'll see you on Friday morning, I'm sure. And then so I'll get to wish you have a good weekend in person.
Sounds good, Dave. Have a great show, okay. And I'll see you tomorrow morning.
Thanks, Rod. Bye. All right, folks, let's see when we come back. I've been speaking, obviously, a lot on taxes and doing tax mapping with people over the past several weeks. But now that I've been digging deep into one after another appointments coming in and helping people figure this out, you know, just some observations. It's kind of like looking at the – remember looking at those pictures that didn't look like anything on the wall, kind of mumbled-jumbled up, and you'd cross your eyes and all of a sudden a whale would pop out? That's kind of what's happened to me with these new tax laws. So when we come back, I'm going to kind of talk about some of the aha moments I've had or just observations I've had as I've worked through this with now, maybe 40 people or so over the last 2 weeks. Old Dave's been hitting it hard. Yeah, I'll tell you, I hit so hard that, and you know me, I've been doing this for a long time, and yeah, I've come on a few times with a hoarsey voice or maybe a little bit of a cold, but never, ever, ever do I get sick. Well, so my wife's been gone on a girls' trip. And down in Tampa, sending me pictures of great dinners and drinks and sunshines and sunsets and all kinds of stuff. So anyway, I don't know if that's rubbing it in my face or what, but she's having a great time. My son and I have been, bashing it since last Thursday. No, let me think. That's not right. Since Sunday, I'm sorry. But still, that's a long time for guys, especially Sunday through Thursday. And about Wednesday, the wheels fell off. I'm like, Mama leaves the house for 3 days and the wheels fall off. Well, the wheels fell off primarily because I got sick. So on Sunday morning, everything was cool Saturday. Sunday morning, let's see, when did she leave? I'm trying to think. But anyway, she was gone. She left Sunday. So we get up, we go turkey hunting on Sunday morning, early. Then she leaves after that. Heard a couple birds, had a good morning. We didn't harvest one, but that's fine. Went home, crashed out for a little bit, intended to get up and go to church at 11, and didn't. I slept right through to like 1 o'clock. Woke up, actually felt great, had a good day, and that evening, all of a sudden, just things didn't start feeling right. So I woke up Monday morning, first day on my own, getting the dogs fed, dogs out, kid up, fed, all the stuff that you do as a parent. And Will's getting ready to go, and I said, but I'm going to have to stay home. So I'm at 7:30 in the morning, texting, calling. I had a full day. Man, my day was packed full of appointments. I had workout starting at, just crazy, and then appointment after appointment. So I told Carolyn, hey, knock me out until 11, and then we'll figure it out here in a few hours. Well, all of a sudden, man, I had 102 temperature. And that thing rocked me all day Monday, so I had to rock out my day. Monday night, I'm very optimistic. I'm like, I'm good. I'm ready to go. So I show up at the office on Tuesday. Probably not a good idea. Wore me out. But my temperature seemed to be gone. Well, by 2 o'clock, it was back at about 101. So I go back home. Fight through it Tuesday night. Wednesday, kind of a low grade, but fight through it. But today, finally, Thursday, I'm over the hump. Although this morning when I woke up, there was a slight temperature. But I'm good. So not only have I been, I think maybe because I've had all these appointments running, that's what my office thinks. I've been burning it at both ends. That's why, I got sick. But I don't know. I think it's just going around, right? Isn't everyone out there having an issue with a little fever and things like that? But anyway, I guess I'm human, and that happens to everybody. So I'll take a break, and we'll come back, and we're going to talk taxes. This is Your Money with David Hayes. When Mama's gone, stuff just happens. We get fights in the house. I bought a piano. My son's been wanting to learn to play the piano. Oh, goodness. So, now, not a real fancy piano, but a nice piano, one that has the real keys on it. And my son has a pretty good ear. So, I'm laying on the couch with 102 temperature, and, he walks in, and after we bought it on Sunday, he does a little bit Sunday night, Monday, whatever. So I'm laying on the couch Monday night with a 102 temperature, and he comes in, "Hey, Dad, do you feel good enough to come in and listen to the song that I can play?" Well, how do you say no to that? So, so I get up, blanket around me, walk in there. Unfortunately, I didn't have to listen to Chopsticks. I mean, he actually had a real song. Pirates of the Caribbean is what he was playing me. So I thought that was pretty impressive. What's cool is that when I took piano lessons, which I was terrible, I only did it because the girl was cute, and it was $10, and I only had $10, so I got one lesson. Now he pulls it up on his phone and it's teach me how to play piano. And it says, you know, do this, do this, do this. And, you know, he's catching on, but we're going to get him some real lessons and see if he can entertain us at Christmas time. That's why you buy a kid a piano. You need to be entertained at Christmas time. Hey, talking about Social Security real quick before I get into taxes. Everyone wants to know about these break evens, and I talked about it last week, but I can't talk about it enough. Some stuff came out from Transamerica. I use it, gosh, probably every day in meetings. Talking about what if you took it at 62 versus waiting to 66? Well, the breakover point, according to Transamerica, is 78 years of age. So if you waited to 66 and you live past 78, then you'd be better off. What about waiting till 70 rather than 62? So if you took it at 62 versus 70, the breakover is 80 and a half years. 66 to 70, 82 and a half years. So folks, I'm telling you, don't think just about yourself. Think about your family. If you're married, there's like a 25% chance that one of you are going to make it well into your 90s. So think about it from a family perspective, not from your own perspective, because it becomes the family benefit, not just your own benefit. All right. But if you like a free Social Security analysis, it's quick and easy, and Kevin can crank it out for you. Just shoot an email to cfci.us. And Mallory's on the other end of that, not me. She is the air traffic controller. So if you don't get a quick response, you know, I apologize. We're kind of new at offering stuff like this up. But you can always call the office as well. You know where to find us, cfci.us. You can find us that way and find a number and call us. But hopefully we're quick to respond. I'm kind of obsessed with that. So, and I talked to Mallory about that this morning. She knows. So anyway, all right, let's talk taxes. So I've been doing all these tax map meetings with people, and it's been a lot of fun. But the thing that I've kind of just kind of an aha moment is the oddity of how these tax brackets work. For example, I mean, if you're married filing a joint return, the first $24,000 of income is free. You don't pay any taxes on that whatsoever. And I'm talking federal, not state. If you're over 65, you both get a $1,300 exemption. So the first $26,600 is free of tax. Then you move into the 10% bracket. So the next $19,000 or so of income is taxed at 10%. And then you just move up just a little to 12%. So you go from 10 to 12. And the next about $50,000 is taxed at 12%. So you have zero tax for the first 24, 26, 10% on the next 19, a little bit of a jump to 12, all the way out to another 50, or total of about 77 or so. And this is married filing joint. But then it goes from 12 to all the way to 22. Big jump. And that 22 bracket is pretty small. It doesn't actually go out very far as far as income goes. And then another small little jump to 24, and then that goes out forever. That goes out to like $315,000 of taxable income. And then you have another big jump up to 32%. And then just a little small jump then to 35, and another small jump to 37, and that goes out forever. I just found it pretty fascinating and wondered how they came up with how wide these brackets were, and at what point they jumped up, and by how much. And as I've said before, they were very surgical in how they constructed this new tax law. Remember, it was passed under budget reconciliation, which means for everything you get, you give something up. So obviously, in that bracket that ran from, you know, like 22% wasn't very big or something, and then that 24 was much, I don't know. It's kind of interesting to me. And then you have to figure out, how does Social Security play into this? So what about capital gains? I mean, it's just pretty fascinating for me to see these numbers kind of come to life, like that whale in that picture that you have to cross your eyes to have it pop out to see. I was doing a thing for a person, and they were talking about their plan distributions for 2018 and how much they'd taken so far, and we were doing a tax map, and they said, hey, we're going to take out another $28,000 this year. And I said, okay, whoa. You have $4,800 left at 12%. If everything else you take out is going to jump you all the way, that next dollar is going to be at 22%. Is there any other source of money, any other place you can get that $28,000 that you need to remodel the kitchen? They said, well, we have money in the bank, but that's kind of like my mom's money. We have a home equity line. It's $50,000. Go there and get it. How much? They said the interest rate was like 4%. I said, 4 is better than 22. Go get it there. And then next year, when you're in a new tax year, take the 28 out at 12, pay off your home equity line, and then you're still, in their case, they still had about $54,000 of availability to do a Roth conversion at 12%. Now, this is complicated stuff. I understand. You're driving down the road, and you're like, wait, Dave, this is way too complicated for me. But I'm just saying that when you do the math and you combine everything you have going on, it is pretty darn amazing how this stuff just pops right out. And I look at this, and I'm like, wow, man, this is a great deal. And I think okay, we have until the end of 2025. And in their case, this couple that I met with, if we do it right, we can move $378,000 of his $500,000 IRA over from taxable to tax-free at an astonishing 12% tax cost. That doesn't include state. Who would not take that deal? You mean I can pay it off today at 12 to not ever pay it again? Even if you use a hypothetical return of 5.5% on the money that you converted, you're going to have a Roth worth about $458,000 at the end of the 7 years with the $378,000 that you converted. So how much motivation can I give you, I ask? If this doesn't motivate you, nothing will. So again, Kevin can do this for you as well, the free tax map. We're going to keep saying it and keep doing it until he gets overwhelmed with it, and then we'll probably have to stop it at that point. But for right now, he still has the capacity to take it on. And it's pretty simple. You provide your latest tax return. You'll ask a few questions about what's happening in 2018, lay it out for you. But we're always suggesting to people to not actually do a Roth conversion until we get into later this year, once you know actually what has unfolded, because you don't want to get caught in the crosshair. Because you remember, you cannot do recharacterizations anymore. If I do a Roth conversion, there is no do-over, so you need to be sure. So wait until November, early December, before you actually do the conversions, but be keyed up to do it. All right? Makes sense? All right, let's take a quick break. I hope I have enough time. But questions of the week. Man, I had a bunch of them, and I thought this will be cool to go through some of the cool questions I've had and how we were able to answer them. We're going to take a break right now, come back, and hopefully cover as many as we can. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. It's Your Money with David Hayes. We have new headphones in the studio, and I was fighting them like I was fighting a grizzly bear, flipping and flopping around, so that's why the music went a little long. Give me time to settle in. All right. Of course, you know, in my line of work, we get questions every day, all day, and all week, and we used to commit an entire show to questions of the week and sometimes just a segment to questions of the week, and then we got away from it. Now I want to get back to it because they're great questions, but here's one. Do you suggest that people quit saving money once they retire? I'm getting close to retirement, and I'm trying to figure out if I can cut back on how much I save or simply stop putting money aside for later altogether. Here's what I like to do. I like to try to replace 100% of your take-home income, and then you keep doing what you've always been doing. I mean, keep saving the way you've been saving. That's what you're comfortable with. I know we can do some retirement calculations and say, okay, if you quit putting this $1,000 a month away, then that's $1,000 less you're going to need, which is this much less you're going to need in investments. So therefore, yay, you can retire. Well, that doesn't give you comfort. So I think as long as you can replace 100% of your take-home pay, keep doing what you're doing. Is it better to contribute to my 401k or HSA? My husband is maxing out his 401k. I'm putting just enough in to get my company matched, but now I can say more and wasn't sure where to put it. Well, I would definitely keep putting your money into the 401k to get your match, but man, I love the HSA. It's the triple threat, tax-deferred going in, tax-free going out, and you can also use it as a tax-free income stream in retirement, similar to a Roth, because you can back pay yourself for out-of-pocket healthcare expenses once you retire, not just simply paying for things like eyeglasses and hearing aids and things like that. It's a great vehicle. So pay your current cost of medical out of pocket. Let that HSA grow. Keep contributing all the way up to age 65, and you will have created a massive, massive tax-free opportunity for whatever pretty much you want to do. And remember, tax deferred going in, tax free coming out, that's wonderful. All right, got more time here. I'm going through it kind of quick. I've been listening, but wanted to put some money into my Roth 403B at IU, but I can't find anywhere online that suggests that I have that option. Any insight would be helpful. So let's see. I actually did some homework on that, and if I can find the information, there is one, and it depends on the contract number that you have. So since I think I misplaced it here, I know I have it. Oh, here it is. So, and you're not going to write this down, but it depends on which 403B plan you're participating in. A plan that ends in 265 will allow for Roth, but the plans that end in 267 will not. So my suggestion is that if you're with TIAA Creft, you give them a call and ask them if there is a Roth option rather than try to peruse online. That doesn't always give you the best information. All right, let's take a look here. I'm getting divorced. Not sure how we're going to end up splitting the IRA, how that works. I'm sure it'll be explained to me later, but I am just a planning freak and want to know ahead of time. Sure, qualified relation domestic order. I'm going quick because I'm running out of time, but I was getting ready to say QCD, qualified charitable contribution. But here's what happens. The court, they sign off on it. The account is split at the custodial level. It becomes your own account, and then you can do with it whatever you want. So it works that way. Don't plan on having access to it the day of the divorce because the divorce decree has to provide the documents to the custodian. Then they have to provide paperwork to you, and then it has to get split, and it gets a little bit, you know, hairy. But it's not hairy. It just takes some time. So hopefully you have some other monies to go to for living expenses while you're getting the IRA split. Sorry to go so quick, but I'm running out of time. I got to take one more break to come back to wrap up the show. I'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Qualified domestic relation order. You know what? I watch Jeopardy a lot if I'm home, and I know all the answers. Not all the answers, but some of the answers, but I can never come up with them on the spot. But qualified domestic relation order, that's what splits up an IRA or qualified plan. All right, folks, I hope you enjoyed the show. Of course, we'll be back next week. I'm going to be on convention, so I'm not sure if I'll be able to call in or not call in, but we'll certainly be handling the show next week, and it will be a good one, as it always is. So we hope you enjoy this wonderful, wonderful weather here in Bloomington. Finally, 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 whether you're an outdoorsman or gardening, putting down your mulch, mowing your grass, mushroom hunting, fishing, turkey hunting, whatever it does that floats your boat, hope you get to do it this weekend. So hope everyone has a great one. We'll talk to you next week, everyone. Bye-bye.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.